This is Night Call. Broadcast live with host Russ Gibb and tonight's guest, Reverend Mr. James Lawson Jr. Tonight's subject, how does the Negro feel about Vietnam? You participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Now here's Night Call host, Russ Gibb.
Hello, Night People. This is Gibb. Standing by in Memphis, Tennessee, is Methodist minister, the Reverend Mr. James M. Lawson, Jr. Mr. Lawson has been active in the civil rights movement since his university days at Vanderbilt. If you'd like to ask Mr. Lawson a question on tonight's topic, how does the Negro feel about Vietnam, or make a comment, give us a call here at Night Call. Now, our Night Call operators are on duty, our lines are open, and we invite you to join us here at Night Call. Very simple. All you have to do is dial area code 313-846-6601. Now, remember, you may call from anywhere collect. Please make that call station to station. Our Night Call number, area code 313-846-6601. And remember, you may make the call collect, you may reverse the charges. Area code 313-846-6601. Mr. Lawson, how did you become involved in civil rights activities? Well, I see you got a little cold there this evening.
Excuse me.
That's quite all right.
I became involved in civil rights activities, I suspect, the first time growing up as a boy in Ohio, that white boy or girl called me nigger on the streets or elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And as I tried to relate this to a hostile society and my family sought to help me understand the meaning of Christian love and understand how it was necessary to work to change this. I think this is where I got involved. In any case, I cannot remember, even in early adolescence, any time that I've not been involved in some way. I sat in, as an illustration, way back in 1946 and 47.
That was in the early sit-in.
That's right. And I developed a pattern back then as I traveled for the Methodist Church in youth activities, that when a hotel or restaurant refused me service, I followed the pattern of remaining on the scene and talking to the manager and trying to do something about it. Of course, more recently, I've been involved since 1957 in the South, moving throughout many of the crisis places since then, helping to organize the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, working actively in the sit-in campaign, the Freedom Rides, and many activities since then.
Has there ever been a time, Reverend, that you have never felt the fact that you're a Negro?
Oh, well, a good part of my life, I have to say. Fairly good part of my life, I have felt like basically I was a human being. And the particularism in terms of being a Negro only, in my mind, contributed to helping me be a human being. I feel this intently most of the time. Of course, now I think the point is that very often in our society, unfortunately, I do get reminded that I'm a Negro. Still, you know, that my skin is a certain complexion, and that this means rejection without any sense of, you know, my humanity.
Now, what about since you've been wearing the collar? How does this affect you?
No difference there. It's still the same. Of course, I don't wear clericals all the time, and I suspect that even if I did, this would not really make that much difference.
Well, Jim, how does the Negro feel about Vietnam?
Well, I think, Russ, you have to say here that there is a mixture of feeling. I would say that, like most Americans, most Negro Americans also follow American policy regardless. They don't do that much thinking about it. It's policy and they follow it. In the very same way, of course, that most Negroes have gone along with segregation for so very long because it's the pattern. Now, I think this is quite dangerous for a democratic society, for people not to be active and responsible citizens in that feeling responsible for every decision of their government as well. But it's one of the facts of life. Now, many Negroes today, however, particularly those of us who've been deeply involved in civil rights, have a lot of hesitations about Vietnam.
What do you mean, hesitations?
Well, as an illustration, many of us wonder to what extent the country becoming preoccupied with Vietnam will mean once again that the whole civil rights struggle will have to be postponed, that the hopes of Negro people that they will be brought into the mainstream of American life, that this hope will be hindered and stopped by virtue of the preoccupation with the war effort. This tends to happen.
In other words, any activities that might tend to disunite the country would be considered, giving aid and comfort to the enemy.
Right, and there have already been editorials, at least in this part of the country, in the South, there have been editorials that have hinted, you know, that the civil rights people and the Negroes ought to now calm down and wait until after Vietnam is over. Many of us do not like this possibility. Of course, another hesitation is, let me say it very simply, the way in which right now we Americans and many of our soldiers in Vietnam are calling the people we're fighting gooks. And some of us would raise the question, well, what is the difference between the term gook and the term nigger? Both terms are terms of prejudice and animosity. In other words, we think, many of us feel that there is a real relationship between areas of our foreign policy and areas in which we deal with people in other places in the world and the learning processes of prejudice that have been that we have been conditioned to accept. Let me see if I can make this more specific. I would say that the subconscious ways in which we have lived in prejudice and segregation have helped us to develop certain attitudes toward people, as an illustration, an attitude that's very strong, influential in helping us look at other people in the world is this one. There are people in the world who only understand force, meaning violence. Well, now, what we're saying here is that there are people in the world who are not like you and me. You can't sit and talk with them, communicate with them as human beings. The only thing they understand is when you push them around, when you use violence against them.
This would be our attitude toward the gooks or the, the Viet Cong, in other words.
Exactly. And this is a very deep-rooted form of prejudice in the United States because we've had historically, this attitude toward the Polish Americans, to early immigrant groups of one kind or another, to Negro Americans, very clearly, the lynching pattern, the pattern of police brutality, the pattern of the vigilante groups, the way in which the Reconstruction days turned into the pattern of segregation was brought about by violence, you see, keeping the Negro in his place.
Now, the white man, then, has been conditioned to have a certain amount of prejudice in him. Is this what you're saying?
This is what I'm saying, yes.
And we are extending this over into the foreign field and particularly into Vietnam.
I say that many of the ways in which we Americans look at the world have been shaped by generations of racial prejudice, religious bigotry, and segregation.
Well, Jim, don't we consider ourselves, don't we have the idea that most Americans, at least that I know, feel that this is the one country in the world where we aren't prejudiced, really, where we have a lot of freedom, and if other people would just, you know, imitate us, we'd be in better, the world be in better shape.
Well, yes, this is right, Russ. We do feel this way about ourselves, but you know, even this attitude that we are such moral people and superior people is a basic attitude that grows out of prejudice. It is a part of the theology and the psychology of prejudice. One of the very basics of country. Now, for an illustration, as we say that we are free of prejudice, in the United States today, de facto segregation, North and South, grows and is growing at this very moment. De facto segregation is becoming the overwhelming mark of our society, and most Negroes know this, even though we say, you see, that we're free and open. We have the Civil Rights Bill of 1964, and yet most sociologists as well as civil rights people would say that the Civil Rights Bill of 1964 has not even touched the heart of the Negro's plight in America, as witness Watts in Los Angeles.
Our topic tonight on Night Call, how does a Negro feel about Vietnam? Our Night Call number, area code 313-846-6601. Jim.
Yeah.
Are all Negroes protesting Vietnam?
No, by no means. As I said earlier, most Negroes go along with most Americans when the government commits us to a specific policy. The people who do reading and thinking about it and want to take personal responsibility for that policy are very few, generally, always.
All right. Negro men are dying in Vietnam,
right,
just as white boys. Now, how does a Negro feel about fighting for a country that he might feel does not grant him equal rights?
Well, of course, you know, there are a number, particularly of the younger Negro people, and particularly those who have been deeply involved in the whole civil rights struggle, and some of them have been deeply involved in some of the, a fewer number, no doubt, who've been involved in some of the more militant efforts and groups and all, who feel as though they cannot fight in this war. In fact, I've been surprised to discover among particularly younger people a genuine feeling that this is the wrong kind of war at the wrong time and in the wrong place.
Now, is this because they are Negro or just because they're American?
Well, I think on the part of the Negroes, it's because they feel as though, as Negroes, they cannot get themselves involved with fighting in another part of the world a battle when the real battle in their minds must still go on here in the United States. On the part of the Negroes, this is the attitude.
Now, would this be just the younger Negro that feels this way?
Yes, I think it's primarily younger Negroes, and as I say, younger Negroes who are deeply involved in the civil rights struggle who feel this way, and I've met a surprising number of these.
Do many young Negroes express this to you? I mean,
yes.
do they bring it up themselves, or do you have to pull this out of them?
No, many of them express it. In fact, in the civil rights struggles generally today, in meetings of various kinds, the subject comes up automatically. Now, it is one of the most talked about things. It is one of the most talked about issues today in civil rights struggles.
In other words, the Vietnam situation?
Yes, the Vietnam War.
And right. Its effect.
That's right. That's exactly right. So that you get it volunteered time and time and again. And, of course, I, too, have also been in a number of not only Vietnam conversations in campuses, but then I've been in one or two of the Washington demonstrations of one kind or another, and I've been very impressed by the numbers of younger Negroes that I have seen there.
Are any young Negroes burning their draft cards, to your knowledge?
I do not know. Of course, there was a suggestion of this kind, you may recall, in Mississippi, on the part of some of the people in the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party. But I have not heard of any actually doing this. Now, I do know that for actually 3 or 4 or 5 years, we have been getting a number of references on selective service of young Negro men involved in the civil rights struggle who have been declaring themselves as COs.
That's conscientious objectors.
Objectors, right. To war, period.
Would
the Negro, do you think, in the last analysis, and this again can only be opinion, do you think that he would fight if it came right down to the wire?
Now, how do you mean?
If it came down between the civil rights activities here in the United States and the defending of the United States from an enemy, an alien, what would he do?
Well, there's no doubt in my mind that if the clear issue is one of defending the country against a clear enemy, I think that undoubtedly, like most Americans, the Negro would fight. Quite readily, without hesitation. But of course, the difficulty is that for a lot of people, it is not clear that Vietnam is this kind of clear and present danger to the United States, directly or indirectly.
Our guest tonight, the Reverend Mr. James M. Lawson, Jr. Our topic, how does the Negro feel about Vietnam? You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Well, I can't this Sunday. I'm playing golf, and the following Sunday I promise to take the kids to the beach.
Uh-huh.
Man's got to spend some time with his kids, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Besides, we seem to get along just fine without church. You know, it's up to the individual. Gee, look at the time. I got to run. But anyhow, we'll trot along to church one of these days.
Uh-huh. Well, how about 2 weeks from Sunday?
Oh, I never planned that far ahead. 2 weeks, the whole world could blow up by then.
That's right.
Where'd you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by your Council of Churches.
This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb. Hello again, Night People. Our topic on Night Call tonight, how does the Negro feel about Vietnam? And we're talking with the Reverend Mr. James M. Lawson, Jr. He's a Methodist minister and has been rather active in civil rights activities throughout the United States. And we're sort of wondering what the Negro does feel about Vietnam. Does he look upon Vietnam slightly different than the white man? Or should he? Maybe that's the question we ought to ask. Well, if you have an opinion, give us a call here at Night Call. Now, our national Night Call number is area code 313-846-6601. Now remember, you may dial us direct, and if you wish, you may make that call collect. You may reverse the charges. Our Night Call number, area code 313-846-6601. Jim, do you think that many Americans connect the civil rights protesters with those of Vietnam? In other words, are we lumping all the protests into one and condemning them?
Yes, actually, Russ, I have tried to be a student of the whole civil rights struggle for a number of years now. And in reality, if you look back over the history, let's say, since about 1955, in terms of the reporting and also many editorials, you'll find that many of the same phrases used now to describe the Vietnam demonstrators have also been used and are used about the civil rights demonstrators. The agitator term, the beatnik term, the communist sympathizer or communist term, soft on communism, helping communism, all these ideas that we use now are also used against the civil rights demonstrators, which has caused me to come to the conclusion that in large measure, the American people generally have become so hysterical over the question of anti-communism that we're no longer prepared to look at world issues on their face value or from the perspective of our own idealism, even, but that rather we look at many of them from a very emotional view and immediately dismiss them as being irrelevant because they are in some way stained with communism or communist sympathy and whatnot.
Are you saying that if there were a good cause and people recognized the fact that this cause was just and a communist came along and said, I'm also for this cause, that many Americans would immediately reverse themselves and go against the cause, even though they had felt that it was a just cause, and it was a just cause? Is this what
yes,
you're saying?
I think this has happened. I think this has happened. I think I'm saying, of course, more than this, I'm saying that the American people are no longer really looking at problems and conditions in our own country and in our world objectively or from the perspective of American history and our idealism. And I would also definitely say that quite often the moment we think or feel that a communist has been involved in any way with something which we think is good, we immediately then decide that the good is not good, it's evil.
And it becomes suspect.
Yes, and it becomes suspect. You see, and today we are justifying many things which I do not think we would otherwise justify, all in the name of its anti-communism or its, the group is soft on communism. As an illustration, one of the fundamental principles which we keep lifting up as a nation is the right of people to self-determination. Yet in our own foreign policy, in the Western Hemisphere, in the cases of Brazil and the Dominican Republic, we have applauded the overthrowing of free elections on the part of the people because the people who were elected, the presidents and leaders who were elected, someone there accused them of being soft on communists, on communism, and we therefore applauded when the military in these two countries overturned the elections, by the people. So here's a principle which we say it's very important, self-determination in elections. And yet we have been willing to accept the canceling out of elections in these two countries by the military on the basis that the military said that the people who were elected were either soft on communists or something similar to that strain.
Jim, I have a caller in Denver, Colorado, standing by, a listener on KTLN, Mr. Revan Blanchard. Good evening, Revan. You're on Night Call. Speak right up, sir.
Good afternoon, sir. I would like to state here that I am not involved in civil rights in the first place. And secondly, on civil rights, I look at civil rights from this angle. I think that our civil rights are pretty clearly outlined in the Constitution of the United States. I feel that if the people were going to try, and I'm speaking of the government here in this country, if they were going to give us our civil rights, I think that they would have given our civil rights many, many years ago. Now, to the war in Vietnam, how does the so-called Negro feel about the war in Vietnam? Well, I can speak because I'm in a position to speak, and that position I wouldn't like to make known. But there are probably many that already know my position. But anyway,
well, we'd like to know that position, Revan.
What's that, sir?
I'd like to know that position.
Well, I wouldn't like to make it known.
Okay.
The Negro at this time, those that are in the position of going to Vietnam, it's a problem to them, and I have been told this by many, from many. As a matter of fact, we've had about seven or eight to become court-martial here and given stiff sentences for not obeying orders from the general officers, what have you. Myself, I could never go there on my own free will, but looking at it from the standpoint as a military man, you have to go if you are told to go because you have taken an oath in the armed forces to carry out the orders. Number one, I can't see fighting for someone else's freedom because the black man in this country, he very well understands that he knows nothing about freedom in America. He knows nothing about democracy, neither the black nor the white, because we have never had true democracy in this country. We are steady fighting for true democracy. And I disagree with some of the things the minister has said, and I agree with some of the things that he has said. Number one thing that I agree with, he said he became active when he was referred to as a nigger. Well, I feel that this should not have triggered his emotion when he was referred to as a nigger, because I don't think if he would stop and think, he would have gotten angry by this slanderous remark, because halfway around the world, people are naming people all over the world, whether they're white or black. This is something as a degrading thing that they even call the French frogs, they call the English limies, they call the Germans, and I've heard this many times. Every nationality that I know has some form of nickname. Now, number one, I would like to say to the minister that we are black people, number one. And those that know me here in Denver, Colorado, know that I am just about as light as the average Caucasian, but I still refer to myself as a black man. I'm very proud to be one of the black race. I'd like to hear the minister's comments now.
Reverend?
Yes.
Your comments.
Reverend Blanchard brings up the whole question of the business of how we name ourselves, and frankly, of course, I don't think how we name ourselves is very important.
That's
whether
true.
We want to use the phrase Negro or black man or colored or whatnot.
I think it is, Reverend.
Well,
if you look at your Webster dictionary, the Caucasian that wrote the dictionary, he has already labeled you, and he has already outlined fairly to you in the dictionary that the word Negro and the word nigger means the same thing.
Well, I disagree with this. The anthropologists,
your eyes?
The anthropologists have also given used the term Negroid, Caucasoid.
We are black people.
Mongoloid. Well, I don't think this is an important issue, and I don't want to fight over this issue.
No, not do I.
I think the far more basic issue to work over is to number one, aim at the basis to where in our country a person is a person, regardless of the technical details about his life.
Let me ask you a question.
And number two, I think that we need to work for the day when people all over the world no longer use the terms of prejudice and derision concerning people, but are prepared to try to live in
community. Do you believe that you can change the Caucasians' idea on you? Do you believe that you can make the Caucasians love you?
No, I don't think you can make anyone love you.
Well, why are you in the streets, Reverend?
I'm in the streets primarily because I want to help people in our time come to accept a better society.
If you understand the fact that you can't change the Caucasians by being in the streets, why are you out there getting our women, and I'm speaking mainly of the black women, why are you out there getting our women beat over the head, molested, and their dress degrading them? Why are you doing this?
Well, I think you're mistaken.
Huh?
I think you're mistaken, Reverend Blanchard.
I've seen it on television, Reverend.
Yes, but you see, most of the people who have been out in the streets are out in the streets on their own free will.
Mm-hmm.
And they're out there because we're trying to bring...
Well, most of all of them are being led by the ministers.
Well, many instances, this is true. And we're doing it because it's one way of trying to change our society. Of course, the thing I would challenge you with is, what are you doing to stop de facto segregation in
the
city of Denver.
One of the best things we can do, and the thing that I'm doing, Reverend, I'm trying to help my own kind pull themselves up out of the gutto. I'm trying to help them have confidence in themselves.
That's fine.
To get them to understand the great significance of pulling their resources and doing it for themselves.
That's fine. That's exactly what we must all be doing. And we have to do it on every level, and one of the levels we must do it on is the level of direct action, a direct action on many levels, because we're not going to eventually change the patterns of exploitation in our society without this.
I'm sorry to tell you, but the truth is the truth.
Well, I agree, you know, in certain ways with you, but I'm just simply saying to you that this is only part of the picture. We must also do what you have seen many of us doing in the South, and I would hope and pray that direct action, nonviolent direct action, will become a larger pattern of the ways in which persons like yourself in places like Denver also begin to act in terms of trying to stop de facto segregation.
Well, Mr. Blanchard, it's time we have to take our station break. I want to thank you for calling Night Call, and thank you for your comments, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Good night.
Mr. Reverend Blanchard, a gentleman from Denver, Colorado, listening on KTLN. Our guest tonight is the Reverend Mr. James M. Lawson, Jr. Our topic, How Does a Negro Feel About Vietnam? You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Look, I'm quite self-sufficient. I made myself what I am, thank you.
But don't you think all of us occasionally could use a little divine or...
Gee, I gotta run. Here's my card, anyhow. I'm a vice president now.
Well, good.
Yes, indeed.
But your name, it's just penciled in here.
Well, there's a big turnover in personnel. You know how it is.
Uh-huh. Well, that's just about how it is in life, isn't it?
Pardon?
We're all just penciled in.
Where you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your
Preceding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church. This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
How does a Negro feel about Vietnam? That's our topic on Night Call tonight, and our guest is a minister who's been very active in the civil rights movement in the United States. He's a Methodist minister, the Reverend Mr. James M. Lawson, Jr. And he's standing by tonight in Memphis, Tennessee, his home. And if you'd like to join us and make a comment on tonight's topic, give us a call here at Night Call. It's very simple to call us. Just dial area code 313-846-6601. Now remember, you may call from anywhere, collect. You may reverse the charges. Now please make that call station to station. And if you get a busy signal, do not become discouraged. Just hang up and dial us again. That's area code 313-846-6601. And what do you think about the Negro and how he feels about Vietnam? Does he feel the same way as a white man? Or do you think he should feel the same way as a white man? Let's hear what you're thinking about out there. And, Jim, I have a caller standing by in Baltimore, Maryland, listener on WBAL, Mr. Robert Jones. Good evening, Robert. You're on Night Call, sir. Your comment, please.
Sir, I'm a merchant seaman. I've been to Saigon, Vietnam, and I've met the people over there. I'm a so-called Negro, and I kind of agree with the last caller on a few points, but he didn't stick to the point of how the Negro feel about going to Vietnam.
Now, right, Bob.
This is what I think. I don't think that I was born in New Orleans in the South, you know, Louisiana. And I've been a merchant seaman for about 18 years. And I don't feel that the Negro should go and fight in a country that he don't know anything about, black people just like himself, or people of the black race, when at the same time, the white man over here is killing his women and children just because they go in churches and the government, the United States government, don't even do anything about it. Now, I don't think this is fair. Now, why should we go over there and fight the Chinese people who are people of the same like us? And they have never did us nothing. If they want to be communists, let them be communists. And over here, they preach democracy. And at the same time, right here in Baltimore, it's a lot of places where you can't get a cup of coffee. They won't even serve you in a restaurant. They discriminate against you on the jobs. Our poor, innocent black people is living in slums down Lexington Street. People don't even have decent houses. Why should black people, black young men, go and die in Vietnam? The Chinese haven't did us nothing. I don't even know nothing about those people over there except going over there on the ship, and they treated me friendly. And I come back over here, and the white man called me nigger and mistreat me in Louisiana. They ran me out of Louisiana.
Bob?
Yes, sir.
Do you feel that the United States government hasn't done anything for the Negro?
Well, the only thing I think the solution to the whole problem is just like Mr. Honorable Elijah Muhammad says, is separation of the races.
Are you a black nationalist, Bob?
No, I'm just a so-called Negro. I believe in freedom and justice for all people. I believe in freedom, justice, and equality, but I just can't see how the government, the United States government, supposed to believe in righteousness and justice, can got the nerve to ask a young man to go over there and fight the Chinese, and he ain't never seen the Chinaman, and he don't even know what he over there for in the first place, and the man over there is trying to fighting for what he believes in, and it is killing people, and it's not good. So I believe that the Negro's fight is right here in America, and not over in Vietnam, is to solve our problem here, just like Mr. Muhammad said. I read the paper, Mr. Muhammad Speaks, and I read this book called Message to the Black Man. And this book says the separation of the races in America will solve the problem. We don't have no business in Vietnam. This is my opinion. And the Reverend, I think he should read Mr. Muhammad's book, Message to the Black Man, and he will get a solution to the problem.
Reverend Lawson?
Yes.
Would you like to comment?
Well, I think Mr. Jones is quite mistaken about the solution to the problem being separation of the races. This cannot in the city, in the country. This is precisely what the segregationists have said over the years, and this has only meant more tyranny and exploitation for the Negro. And I think Muhammad Ali is quite incorrect. He's impractical, because this can never be. We know this now, and I don't think this is the solution. Now, I think, on the other hand, Mr. Jones, you're quite right in saying that most of the people who are in Vietnam do not know why they're over there, except for what they think are very simple reasons, which are not the real reasons. And I also think that you're quite right in saying that the Negro ought not to be over there. This is my position, at least.
See, I was born in the South, you see, and I've been overseas. I've traveled overseas.
Well, I came from Saigon myself just in July. I was there.
And I was over there, and I met a lot of those people, and those are good people. Those Chinese people, all I've ever known them do is treat me right. Now, the United States government want the black man to leave America and go way over there to kill people. For what? He don't even know why. He says stop communism. Communism is not over here. Communism is over there, but why should we have to go over there to stop it? We should just stay over here, and then they're killing out. And if you're a Christian and you go to church and worship, they throw a bomb in the church, and the same government don't do nothing about it. This is what I can. And the Negroes now is trying to find a solution to the problem. And Mr. Muhammad says that God separated the peoples on the earth. He put the white people in Europe. He put the Chinese in China. He put the black man in Africa. And everybody is separated. And when by mixing the races, that's where you got all the trouble. If the white man would leave Vietnam, they wouldn't have no trouble over there. That's why the white man wants to take the black man over here and make him kill his black Chinese cousin. And I don't think that that's fair. You see what I mean? And they're just using us instead of treating us justly. The people don't have no jobs over here. The people is hungry. They're on the relief or the welfare. The poor Negroes. And this is the truth. And you can examine that and find out, Reverend, and find out that separation of the races, like Mr. Muhammad says, put the black man where he belongs in his own land, and leave the white man to himself, and we'll all get along in peace.
No, I disagree.
Mixing and integration, well, you've got...
I think, Mr. Jones, that God's will for mankind, particularly as it's come out of a Judaic-Christian idea, is that the human race was created by God for fellowship one with another. I do not believe that there can be any world in which we try to divide the human race. We are all one, regardless of our cultures, our races, our religions, or our economic class or patterns. We are made of the same blood. We come out of the same stock of life. We come from the same God.
If you examine the planet Earth, was divided in the beginning. You got the black people.
No, this is not true.
The white people is in North Europe.
The Chinese
is in China, and that's where it was in the beginning.
No, it was not that way in the beginning.
That's a fact. That's a fact, and I don't have any kind of education, sir, but I know this to
be so. And I've
if you if you'll remember though,
you got to Arabia.
If you remember the biblical story, if you remember the biblical
peace until the other man start to enroll on the next man's territory.
Bob.
In America.
Bob.
Enslaved our foreparents and brought them here for slavery, and here in America. And now, and this is where all the trouble you got. Integration and going to China and Vietnam is not going to solve the problem. And this is a divine solution. It's separation of the races. God is going to put everything back where it belongs. And this is the way Mr. Muhammad said.
Bob, what do you say?
I say that the solution is separation of the races, and you won't have this problem.
Well, I want to thank you for calling Night Call.
You won't have the white man using the black man for a tool and a slave and sending him to fight the wars that the black man is so stupid he won't even stand up and say, hell no, I'm not going, excuse my language, since I'm going to fight and die right here with my black people to get them off the welfare, to get us freedom, justice, and equality right here in America. And the hell with the Vietnam. Let's fight right here in America to take the white man for mistreating us.
Bob, I want to thank you for your opinions.
Well, I mean, you would examine it and find out that it's the truth. Honorable Elijah Muhammad got the message to
Well, we're more interested in your opinion, Bob. And thank you very much for calling Night Call.
Say, Russ?
Yes, sir.
Do I have a minute to say something?
Yes, you certainly do.
Okay, well, let me just say that it seems to me that all violence and war, the destruction of human life, is immoral. And that, of course, the great problem in my own mind with violence of any kind, whether in Vietnam or elsewhere, is that it only multiplies our problems and it multiplies the evil we're trying to overcome. And this is why, in my own mind, people need to take very seriously the words of Jesus, where he has insisted that you cannot overcome evil by evil. You've got to overcome evil with good. That those who take the sword will perish by the sword. This is one reason why I've been devoted most of my life to the idea of nonviolence in terms of changing social injustice, particularly in race relations. But I believe very firmly that the major reason why our policies in Vietnam are wrong are because we're trying to deal with human problems with a violence which will not solve the problems, but only multiply them. And I think Mr. Jones, at this point, in thinking that there can be such a thing as the separation of the races and fighting here at home as such, I think all of these things can only lead to further disaster and tragedy for the human race.
Jim, recently on another show, I heard a Negro caller make a comment about the fact that the Asiatics were the Negro's brothers. Now, is this a common idea in Negro circles?
Well, I think that it's true among many people. Many Negro people have felt a certain kinship with other colored peoples in the world, particularly as they have become acquainted with the whole history of colonialism in Africa and Asia and other places. They've realized that in a very real way we've had a common injustice perpetrated against us. So there has been a real sense of kinship from this point of view.
Our guest tonight, the Reverend Mr. James M. Lawson, Jr. He's a Methodist minister. Our topic, how does the Negro feel about Vietnam? You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Busy America! Busy America! Busy making money! Busy buying gadgets, busy keeping up with
you-know-who. Is that your idea of fulfillment?
Don't you wonder if there's more to life than just that rat race with no finish line? Where'd you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him?
It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by your Council of Churches.
This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
The Reverend Mr. James M. Lawson, Jr. is our guest on Night Call tonight. Our topic, how does a Negro feel about Vietnam? And so far, we've had several callers, Negro callers, who have said that they don't feel that they'd like to go to Vietnam, and that really they are more concerned about the fact that they do not have full liberties here in the United States. And why should they extend the fight over to Vietnam? Well, maybe you have a different opinion, and you can express that opinion by calling Night Call. Our national number is area code 313-846-6601. That's area code 313-846-6601. And, Jim, I have a caller standing by in Denver, Colorado, a listener on KTLN, Mrs. Gary Campbell. Good evening, Mrs. Campbell. You're on Night Call, ma'am.
I have two questions and a few comments to make. As a black woman, I must agree with the other gentleman. I just don't see how the United States could expect a Negro male to go over to Vietnam or the Dominican Republic or any other place and fight for this country when we have really not that much to gain, or at least up to this point we have. And then I'd like to ask Mr. Lawson, did he make a tour of college campuses last year? I believe I heard him speak at Cairo State College.
Yes, you did.
All right, then. And I did, when we had the tea, I believe I did talk to you then.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to just ask simply one question. How do you think the United States can justify being in Vietnam or the Dominican Republic or any other places where we're fighting and expect a Negro male to fight for them, and then look at Alabama or Mississippi?
Well, I don't think that our government at this point can really justify it on any good historical or moral grounds. Now, of course, we do justify sending our soldiers there primarily because we say we're fighting communism. Of course, my own feeling is that you do not fight communism in this way at all. On the contrary, if we look at the history of the growth of communism over the last 50 years, I think we'll discover that it's been out of war, World War I, World War II, that we've got the greatest increases of communism. I think that the best way for us to fight communism, if this is what we want to do, is by exporting our ideals, by trying to establish social justice, by using our best brain power, our resources, our knowledge, in order to deal with the problems of poverty, exploitation, racial prejudice, disease, illiteracy. If we do these things, I think we can create the kind of world in which no form of tyranny will be a threat.
All right, but you're talking about fighting communism, and that's an idea, really an economic system. But what I specifically mean is how can we justify it and expect our men, the black men, to fight this war for all of these things? Yes, these are admirable things to fight for, but the Negro hasn't. And from listening to veterans of the Korean War and World War II and everything, it was all fine while we were fighting and in the foxholes together, but my goodness, just as soon as they were to get on the planes for home, the name calling started, and then when they arrived home, I mean, not being able to go to a lunch counter or get decent jobs or anything, it's hard.
Yes, I know.
For the young Negro, any other way. I don't know about, I can't speak for the Negro.
Right.
but I'm speaking for myself and my sons if they were to fight in a war.
Right.
I just couldn't see it.
Yes. Well, I tend to agree with you. I have felt this for a very long time, and of course I have also met any number of soldiers and veterans of other wars, Negroes, who have felt the same way. They have had very mixed feelings about this.
Mrs. Campbell, I want to thank you for calling Night Call.
Hi.
Thank you for expressing your opinion. This is Gary Campbell, a lady from Denver, Colorado, who's listening on KTLN, who feels that, with some of the other callers tonight, that the Negro really does not feel that he should be fighting in Vietnam. That the country, the United States, evidently has not fulfilled its promises to the Negro yet. I think that's what they're saying to me, isn't it, Jim?
Yes, I'd agree.
Let's go to Bel Air, Maryland now. Listen on WBAL. Mr. Henry Calvert Newman. Good evening, Mr. Newman. You're on Night Call, sir. Speak right up.
Well, good evening, Mr. Gibbs.
Yes, sir.
Well, wonderful, and I think it's a privilege to talk to you and Reverend Lawson. I might say, too, that the Night Call, I think, is one of the most important forums that possibly we've heard in a good while.
Well, you're very kind. Thank you, sir.
And I hope that it's possible that it stays with you. The thing that I'd like to discuss a little bit, we talked so much about the colored problem, and so often I feel it's not particularly a colored problem, it's possibly a white problem. And I feel, too, that now we are sort of tickling or agitating the conscience of this country, and I think, too, that people are maybe reluctant express themselves if they want to express themselves. This is why I think you're doing a wonderful job to give them an opportunity to do so. The question, though, that I do have, I think that I'm speaking now as a white Protestant American, and I think that while we have a problem expressing ourselves, I think, too, that possibly our colored part of our country is having a problem, too. I find that the clergy is very, is the front of most of the expression of rights. I won't say civil rights, I'm going to say rights. And yet I find that some of their most eloquent and possibly best qualified or public acceptance speakers are not, I should say, helping. Now, I'm talking about Dr. Ralph Bunch. I think that this man who has so much to offer and has offered so much, I feel that he should be not just the clergy of both the white and colored race, but now placing himself in the van. They want to.
Henry, could you speak up a little bit, please?
Yes, is this any better?
Yes.
Good. The point I'm trying to make is this is everybody's problem. It's not one side or the other's problem. There's acceptance on both sides, there's understanding on both sides, and at the same time, there's, I think, dialogue, which is so important. This is the thing I think that you're offering, the opportunity to have people express themselves.
That's one of the main reasons for Night Call, so that we can establish connections and dialogues between different people.
Well, you're doing a wonderful job, and it's just a shame, too, that you're not on Earth. I'm in Bel Air, Maryland, and you should be on earlier.
Well, we're thinking about that, too.
Well, I don't have problems with programming.
Right, sir. Jim, what do you think about Henry's comments?
Well, I think that there is, of course, a real problem in America generally, namely that very frequently the middle-class person, Negro and white alike, very well-educated people, many of them are not deeply involved in the great variety of America's problems. I think we have a great reservoir of brain power and talent, which we do not find taking a deep interest in the things which are hurting people and trying to alleviate them. If you remember, when the Watts explosion came, one of the things that Senator Robert Kennedy said was that it indicated the extent to which the middle-class Negro had to become more deeply involved with the great numbers of ordinary Negroes who live in the ghettos. Well, I would say
yes.
That this is true of all Americans, you know, if we could get in many of our cities the people who consider themselves of goodwill to get into the struggle and provide leadership and help and support, we could get much more change, concrete and dynamic change in our society in many of these matters.
Mr. Newman, I want to thank you for calling Night Call. Thank you for your comments, sir.
Well, thank you very much, and please stay with us and keep up this work.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Henry Calvin Newman, a gentleman from Bel Air, Maryland, listening on WBAL in Baltimore. And let's go out to Indianapolis, Indiana. We have about 2 minutes remaining.
Yes,
and just
hello.
Time for Mrs. Mamie Cole. Hello, Mamie. You're on Night Call, ma'am.
Say, as a Negro woman, that I think the fight in Vietnam is completely useless, not as a Negro woman, but as an American citizen. I can't see what we can solve. We can't change those people's way of thinking. We have communists right here in America, in the United States, and I don't think we can change their minds. So why should we waste useless blood of our boys for something that might be much more needed with Red China or such? And I suppose my time's up.
No, you have a few minutes yet here. Reverend, would you care to comment?
State, because I think that the issue is too much on the racial part. I don't think a Negro feels any different, not an American Negro, any different than a Japanese American does, or a Portuguese American, anyone else that lives in this country. I think if we are ordered to go, we shall have to for the fight. But they keep harping on the one thought that it's what the Negro thinks about going to Vietnam. Vietnam is a useless war. Tell me what it will solve.
Reverend?
Well, I would agree with you, Mrs. Cole. I think the Vietnam War is the most tragic and useless war. I was there this past summer with an interfaith team from Europe and the United States, and from what I was able to see and the many people that I was able to hear speak and
yes.
to ask
well,
questions.
I have a brother. I lost
we were told over and over again by a good number of major religious leaders in Vietnam that the war, it is hopeless to keep on killing. No
this
good can come of this war,
how
is what they said.
How many more boys will they, before they will try to compromise? I mean,
yes.
It just seems useless. I've lost a husband. My son is 13. I have a brother now that just paid me his last visit. He's been in there for 18 years. They froze his, deferment. And I have a next door neighbor. Her husband already has his orders for Vietnam. He was supposed to get out November the 4th. They froze him for 4 months. This isn't fair. He went through the
Mrs. Cole, our time's up, and I want to thank you for expressing your opinions on Night Call.
And I think your program is wonderful.
Thank you, ma'am.
Bye.
This is Mamie Cole, a lady from Indianapolis, Indiana, listening on WFBM. Reverend Lawson, I want to thank you for being our guest on Night Call tonight.
It's my pleasure, Russ, and keep up the good work.
Thank you, sir. Tomorrow night, our guest will be Commander-in-Chief of the Veterans of Foreign Wars, Mr. Andy Borg, who recently returned from Vietnam. Our topic, is Vietnam necessary? Until then, this is Gibb wishing you good luck and Godspeed.
Night Call is produced by the Methodist Church in cooperation with the National Council of Churches and this radio station as a radio forum dedicated to the frank discussion of vital issues of daily life. Night Call encourages its participants to express freely and responsibly their own personal opinions.